At Pluralsight, we don't just teach skills. We are building the tech workforce who deliver results fast, accelerated by top-tier content. Lead with confidence. Lead with expertise. Visit us at Pluralsight.com to tap in and learn more.
From Olivier Messiaen's Quartet for the End of Time, with Catherine Page at the piano. I'm Erica Worth, and welcome to this pianist podcast. Today I am catching up with a pianist, teacher, adjudicator, and administrator for Chetham's International Summer School for Pianists, Catherine Page. Catherine, it's lovely to have you here today.
Brilliant to see you too, Erica, looking so well, as always.
As you are too. You and I go back a long way, of course, don't we? And I think I got to know you through the Chetham's International Piano Summer School, which I believe is the largest of its kind in Europe. So why don't we start with that? If you could, you know, tell listeners how it all began and how it's grown, that would be wonderful.
Yeah, I think, well, first of all, I think playing the piano, as we all know, can be such a lonely and quite isolating thing to do. And anything we can do where we bring people together as pianists is definitely to be applauded. So my husband, Murray McLaughlin, who's head of keyboard at Cheetham's, wanted to find a way to help promote the school. And it started 24 years ago with the idea of helping to get the name better known. It is amazing how many people don't know Cheetham School of Music. Even people in the north don't know it. And I find that quite shocking. Anyway, so 24 years ago, I was busy having children. Seemed to constantly be pregnant. He came up with this idea of running a summer school. And so he started. And in the first year, he was amazed. We got 94, I think it was, on the very first year. And basically, it's grown from that. I wasn't really involved in the first couple of years, apart from trying to help sort of during the course. But it was Murray and scraps of paper literally laid out and teachers being given their pupils going, you timetable them. So we've come a long way since then. So it's grown and grown. We're now, as you said, probably the largest exclusively for the piano. The faculty that come year after year, it's just so exciting. Because as a concert pianist performing around the world, you very often don't meet that many other concert pianists because you're on your own playing your concerts. So I remember Noriko Ogawa and Peter Donohoe had never met till they came on our summer school.
How?
And,
fantastic.
You know, I think the friendships that have developed through the faculty, but obviously the participants and, you know, people often say, why, you know, why is Chet's summer school so special? And I think it is very simply the people that come and teach, the participants that come and take part. We really do feel like a family. And I think in today's world, more and more, I think that's really important. Excuse me. I think in that awful time in lockdown, which in some ways, I mean, we can talk about this maybe a little bit later, but it was terrible, obviously. I think there were some positives out of it. And we actually decided to continue the summer school. I'll never forget it. It was about, I think when, I don't know if you remember exactly when we were told we were going into lockdown, near the beginning of the year. And alarm bells rang for me. And I'm thinking, we've got hundreds of people that are supposed to be coming. Is this actually going to be able to happen? And fairly early on, I actually decided, I said to Murray, we need to decide what we're doing, because we can't keep going and taking money and then we're not going to be able to run it. So we made a decision to go online. And I have to say, it was amazing. I mean, obviously, you know, not everybody decided to carry on, but we had well over 150 people doing it. And they were from all over the world. And we ran coffee mornings like we always do. We had chat rooms with coffee. We did the cabaret. I mean, I'll never forget sitting in my lounge and watching everybody doing all these crazy things from all around the world. And I think that's kind of what makes it so special, that we feel like we're really connected through our love of the piano. And there's no standards in terms of everybody is welcome. And I think that's really crucial as well. So you might get a six-year-old who's only been learning a year or so. Our eldest is 91. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she's been coming for years, Marion. And then we have the whole range of everything in between. And I think it's that mix, which is just so special. Yeah. So long may it continue for as long as we've got the energy to keep doing it. Yeah.
I've only been once, haven't I? Gosh, and that was many, many years ago.
Yes.
I know, but I did feel it was one big family, and there was such a good, there was such a feel good factor about it. You know, and as you say, those, that faculty, and they, a lot, they have to perform as well.
I mean, we do an amazing series of concerts in the fabulous Stoller Hall. For anyone who's never been, Stoller Hall is a must. You must come. It is incredible. It's a beautiful acoustic. It's the home of the Manchester Camerata, who do all their recordings there. It is sublime. We've got beautiful pianos. And yeah, so we have on average 3 or 4 concerts every day, including lunchtimes, evenings, lectures. So we have a huge number of faculty playing, new people coming this year, lots of regulars who many of your readers and listeners will know, Charles Owen, Peter Donohoe, Noriko Ogawa, Martin Roscoe, Leon McCauley. But we've got lots of new people coming this year as well, which is very exciting. Freddie Kemp.
Lovely.
Danny Driver. We've also got two previous winners of the Leeds coming, Anna Sublevia and Yaden, who won Leeds last time. Yeah, so he's coming actually just to play. But Anna's also teaching. So it's, yeah, it's so exciting. We've got Pavel Nassessian coming. Yeah, amazing. Dear Fabio Bedini was supposed to, he was coming. He was. But bless him, he's had to have an operation. So Martin Roscoe amazingly stood in for him. So we're very grateful. But yeah, it's incredible. And I just, everyone says, oh, it's such a lot of work. And it is a lot of work, because I literally timetable everything. You know, 420 people, and I timetable everything. But once you're there, it's like, wow. This is what it's all about.
I'm sure.
You know, the adult amateurs are a major part of the course.
Well, I was going to talk about that. You have a special adult amateur course?
Yeah, very much so. Actually brought about by them themselves, actually. So when we first started, we didn't do it. It was just a piano course. We do lots of other courses. I mean, you can come and do harpsichord, organ, sight reading, Dalcroze. Yeah. The list goes on and on. But primarily, obviously, we're a piano course. But within a year or two, a lot of the adults that came said, is there any way that you could do something where we kind of meet together without maybe having an 8-year-old who's doing their sort of, you know, final diploma and playing Liszt Mazeppa, because it's a bit intimidating when you're only doing your grade 6 pieces or whatever you're doing. So we came up with the adult amateur program, and in essence, the lessons are no different, and that's really important. The lessons are individual. So whoever you are and whatever you're playing, your teacher works with you. So, you know, you've got these teachers who 1 minute are with an 8-year-old doing grade 5, then you'll have an adult amateur who might be, you know, preparing for a diploma, then you'll have another adult who's only been learning a year or two. We've got some adults who are very early stage players, and they all, you know, that's absolutely fine. But the main thing that kind of differentiates the adult amateur course is we have this wonderful hour and a half group class every day. And okay. we come together. I think you came along to one, didn't you, when you're on the course? And, you know, I take some of them and other faculty take it in turns. So I do four during the course. And they play to each other and we kind of do an open class, really, where they get involved. It brings up all sorts of issues that adult amateurs share. You know, often it's nerve. It's feeling worried about wrong notes, which of course really don't matter at all, but somehow seem to become such a big thing. And we have a lot of fun, and there's been many memories made in these classes. And people who on the first day go, no, I don't want to play, I don't want to play, by the end of it, 99% will have played because we support each other. There's no sense of judgment or everyone is willing the person playing to do well.
And well, obviously,
it's there's so important.
There's a kind of a total difference, isn't there, between the youngster and the adult?
Absolutely. I think the sort of sense of awareness of oneself, I think, you know, when you're 7 years old or 9 years old, you know, you're fearless, you just get up there and you don't even think. Often that starts to change as you go through your teenage years, you become more aware. And then obviously adults who have, it's very moving, you know, when you get doctors, lawyers, you know, head teachers who say, you know, I can stand in front of a school of children and have no nerves whatsoever, but put me in front of this piano and I become a quivering wreck. And learning how to overcome that in a really safe space at Chet's is really important, because we all get nervous, everybody, you know, professionals alike. You know, there's not one person, I don't think, that doesn't feel those nerves. It's just how you control them. And that's experience and just doing it, actually.
I think you're right. Well, it's experience. You've got many returners, don't you, that come year after year?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, there is one man, Mick. If you're listening, Mick, he's been on everyone, which is incredible.
Whoa.
So he's seen all the kids grow up, and it is lovely. I would like to say, for anyone who's listening who's never been, don't worry about it being cliquey. Because if you think people keep coming back every year, it sounds like it's a groupie thing. It's not at all. I mean, it really, everybody is so friendly. And I think that's really important, that even if you've never been, you will feel nervous. Everybody does the first time they come, just because it's a big thing for people, isn't it? You know, coming to a school like Cheetham's with the facilities that it has, because, you know, you've got pianos everywhere. I mean, it is joy. You know, you walk down the corridors at 6 in the morning. I'm not kidding you, 6 in the morning. Most of the pianos are being played. Because they're so excited, actually. I think, especially people who work full time, and this is their like holiday bit.
Yeah,
suddenly they've got all these hours and they don't have to think about anything except the piano. How joyful is that?
Escaping. So, yes,
it is.
Passion. Amazing.
You must come again, Erica.
I know. You're only up there.
Too busy.
We're all so busy, aren't we?
I know.
No, I should come. I should join the amateur course because I myself haven't played in public for decades. Oh, actually, I don't want to say that, you know, but
a few years.
But I know recently when I tried, my ankle was wobbling when I was playing the pedal because I was scared again.
That is very common, the shaky leg on the pedal. Yeah. And often what happens is people are so nervous, they put the pedal down and then they can't lift it. It literally stays down because it's like a physical kind of reaction to nerves. It's like they can't lift it, so you either shake like crazy. But yeah, I mean, you know, we could talk forever about all of that, but yeah, what is the solution? I think the solution is, and we'll probably come on to this anyway, is giving yourself the best chance to do your best. And, you know, in terms of what you choose to play is very important, I think.
Yes, of course.
You know, if you're really playing something that is difficult for you at the stage of, you know, wherever you are. So, you know, Erica, if you've not played for a while, are you going to sit down and play the Rachmaninoff second sonata straight away? Probably not. You know, would you feel happier playing something that you find, you know,
easy, of course,
in inverted commas? Then you've got, you know, less to worry about. You know, and so you can concentrate on relaxing and breathing and all these things that we must do, you know.
No, you're right. Oh, it's wonderful. It really is wonderful. How long has the adult amateur course been going?
Gosh, probably about 20 years now. Yeah, something like that. Yeah. More or less, just the first few years we didn't do it. And in terms of numbers, you know, as I say, we get, well, over 200 on each part.
Yes.
And of that, about a third are adult amateurs. So we also get adults come who don't go on the adult amateur course.
Yes.
I often say, you know, people who are new say, oh, it's like the name implies something. And to me, it's like, actually, all you do is you get more. You get your adult amateur group.
Yes.
But, you know, it's some people just choose not to go on it. And that's fine. So we have about 65 to 70 adult amateurs on
and
each part.
And it kicks off next
month. Oh, too soon. I've got too much to do. Oh, 13th of August.
13th.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, for anyone listening, the concerts are all open to the public and they are incredible. If you look at the website, I mean, it is just the repertoire. I added up within 10 days of concerts, we've got 56 composers being played.
Woo, fantastic.
That is a lot of composers.
That is amazing. Would you like to spell out the website while you're here?
Yeah, of course. So it's www.pianosummerschool.com.
Okay.
Nice and easy. Pianosummerschool.com. If you want to look at the concerts, then you go to Stoller Hall, which is Stoller, S-T-O-L-L-E-R, hall.com.
Perfect.
And you can buy individual tickets for any concerts there. It would be lovely to see you. And students quite often are free for, I think, the lunch times. We've even got this year the lovely Simon Parkin playing with his wife, Hannah Roberts, on the cello.
Fantastic.
So that's going to be amazing. We've got Bar Bar the Elephant, a lovely children's concert by Neil Ruttman, the American pianist, who was a finalist in the Busoni competition. And he narrates it and plays it at the same time. So lovely. So a huge amount of repertoire. Peter Donohoe doing the hammer clavier sonata. Lots of Ravel, obviously Sarti being his anniversary. Noriko Ogawa is doing a wonderful all Sarti program. So have a look. It's really worth it. And love to see any of you there.
I'll try and get there as well. I will. aside from the summer school, I know you're a very busy woman. Well, actually, most probably at the moment, you're so immersed in it. But what else do you do aside from the summer?
Well, musically, so never mind personally, but musically, I now teach at Cheetham's in term time. So it's a great privilege, actually. I didn't teach there for a long time. As I've said, Murray, my husband, is head of keyboard there. But obviously, when I was younger, I was having all these children. And so my time was rather taken up with that. And then I became much more involved with summer school. But then as the children grew up and the demands in the piano department were getting more and more, basically, I applied and started teaching at Cheetham's. It started quite small, actually. I was doing less than I am now. The piano department at Cheetham's is really thriving. I mean, it is now the biggest it's ever been. I think we've got 105 pianists.
Whoa.
When you consider the school itself is only 320.
Whoa.
So it's massive, massive. And it is a privilege to teach there. From my youngest, I have twins of 8 who are just adorable and very hardworking. And I've just said goodbye to some in year 13 that I was teaching as well. Not all going on to do music. He's a mathematician, the one that's just left. But it's very demanding, actually, wonderfully inspiring and demanding, because you're dealing with, you know, talents that demand that, well, everybody demands, but everyone, I think, teaching the piano is all about making what you want them to achieve sort of taught in a way that really reaches them as individuals, because you can't just have a one, you know, one lesson fits all. You know, you've got to work with the person. And we have a lot of very unique individuals. Obviously, the world is full of them. And so I've learned a lot as a teacher, from working there. Very different than working with adults, obviously. Hugely different in terms of physicality. You know, when you see these tiny little hands, you know, that aren't even properly formed yet. And, you know, one of the challenges actually is repertoire for young children who are advanced, because, you know, I've got a boy who's 10 and I'm trying to find him repertoire. He's, you know, ready to do a diploma and he can barely stretch an octave. So,
and he's ready to do a diploma. Amazing.
Yeah, but it's difficult, because, you know, you go, oh yes, and then you think, and of course you can do clever rearranging and you can miss out the odd note here and there, but, you know, if you've got lots and lots of octaves, then that's it, can't do it, you know. So it is challenging, but very exciting and very rewarding. But it's nice to have a summer break.
Oh yes, well, I'm glad to hear that you're enjoying that. And obviously you've mentioned your musically talented husband Murray McLaughlin, but of course we know, those that know you, you've got some rather musically talented children.
Yeah, well, I have 5 children. I'm a bit mad, a bit mad. The eldest is not a musician, but I'm now a grandmother, so that's lovely. Woo.
Congratulations.
And then the next one is Callum.
Yes.
So Callum McLaughlin has just competed in the Clyburn. He was in the semi-finals of the Leeds. He was a semi-finalist at Santander. He's doing very, very well indeed. He's just moving in September. He's been in Salzburg since he left Chets. So he was a student at Chets with the wonderful Dina Parakina. But he moved to Salzburg and was at the Mozarteum, where he's just finishing his master's. And he was there with Jacques Rouvier and Claudius Tansky for undergrad. He's also been doing a double master's in Cologne with Claudio. Now, I can never say his name properly. Claudio Mehetna Martinez.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. Who is, I mean, you know, he's had just phenomenal lessons. But now he's moving to Berlin and he's going to be studying with Kirill Gerstein.
Oh, wonderful.
Which is rather exciting. He's sad to leave Salzburg, but very excited for Berlin.
Oh.
So yeah, so that's good. And then next one down is Matthew. So Matthew McLaughlin has just finished at the Royal College of Music, where he's finished his master's with Dina Parakina. He won the Chapel Gold Medal while he was there in his second year. So he did very, very well there, won the Bromsgrove competition. He's about to go to Paris to L'École Normale with Pierre Riach to do an artist diploma. So that's him. And then there's Rose, who I believe wrote something for you a few years ago when she was a Leeds ambassador at the competition.
She did. Oh, yeah.
She did a little article for you.
Yeah.
So she's just finished. She's studying with, 3 rather marvellous men. your readers certainly know them. Charles Owen.
Lovely.
Martin Roscoe and Ronan O'Hora. Fantastic. So she's at the Guildhall. So she's just finished her master's. She's young. She kind of compressed it all and did it quick, so she's younger than, you know, Jenny. 20 was she now? 23. I lose track, to be honest, but anyway, so she's about to do her artist diploma staying at the Guildhall. But yeah, she's her really amazing project she did with the Chopin. I don't know if you remember seeing it, the 22 nocturnes by women composers. That was part of a wonderful initiative at the Royal Northern, where as part of their undergrad, their final year, they have to come up with a project and it has to be something a bit different. So she said to us, I'd quite like to commission people to write new pieces based on Chopin nocturnes, because she loves them and she's playing them all. And she said, what do you think? And so we were like, well, yeah, it's very adventurous, you know. And then we said, well, if you're going to do that, it ought to be published. You know, the whole point is you want people to play the music. So anyway, long story short, Eleanor Cobb has produced this fabulous book, 22 brand new pieces, and she performed at King's Place as part of the London Festival that Charles and Katia run. Absolutely brilliant. And we're talking, she's talking about recording it with AB Records, which is very exciting. So yeah, she's the last musician. I do also have a baby who's 21 and he's a footballer living in New York.
Oh my goodness, so
he's the odd one out. But he played a mean cello and piano when he was 9.
What a talented family. I mean, do you think because you and Murray are so talented yourselves, of course that must have affected the children that you had?
Poor souls never have a choice. I don't know. I mean, you know, you probably need to ask them, but I remember when they were at Chet's, because obviously there were the three of them in the middle, they were at Chet's doing piano. And in fact, Rose was a chorister to start with. And I have to say, what an education. Amazing. So she was a chorister at Manchester Cathedral. And in the holidays, quite often friends of them would come over to our house and, you know, they'd be playing piano and stuff. And we might say something, you know, whatever we might be about what they were doing. And they were like, oh, you don't realise how lucky you are having pianists as parents, they can help you in the holidays. And of course they're like going, yeah, right. Because in some ways it's awful actually, because you can't escape it. I think the learning process when you're in a house where there's music all the time, by the time we got to our baby Alec, he kind of by osmosis almost learned to play.
Yeah.
He got through things so quickly because he'd heard it all. So it has a lot of advantages. The fact they all play the piano, you know, some people might say that's a bit crazy, but you couldn't get more different pianists. They are all so different. The one who's most like Murray is Matthew. Sorry, Matthew. But yeah, he is Murray.
How many pianos do you have at home? You must have at least two.
Well, actually, a bane of a pianist's life, as most of us know, is the neighbours. Would we not all agree with that? Neighbours. If you don't live next to nice people who like the piano, it can be a nightmare. So when they were growing up, it was fine. Our neighbours were fine. We have two in the house and we have two in the garden in separate buildings, you know. Anyway, so that was fine. But then as they got older and the neighbours changed, suddenly life, and it was actually lockdown that did it. When we were all at home, literally, we were all stuck. So, of course, what did we do? We played piano. And, of course, Murray and I were teaching. So we were teaching, you know, online, all the Cheetham's pupils. So I'd be in Singapore, I'd be in China. And I was teaching and Murray was in another room teaching.
Yeah.
And basically that was the start of neighbours getting annoyed. So we are just about to have built in the garden a soundproof, completely soundproof music studio. So a room within a room. So they literally, all the pianos will then be in the garden.
Well, I think it's worth the investment. I really do.
Well, I mean, it's either that or move into a field somewhere. <you know? laughs> So I hope our neighbours aren't listening. But anyway, but it's difficult. I mean, it is very difficult.
It is difficult.
And you have to practice, don't you? You can't not.
Well, yes, you're right. Well, now about yourself, I mean, we've talked about Murray and your kids. I'm sure listeners would love to hear about your own background. I wasn't in the UK at the time, but I know you were quite a talented student at one of the music colleges here.
Yeah, I mean, interestingly, I grew up in a household with no music. So, you know, it's in some ways, if you end up going into the music profession from a household where there's no music, I mean, I think that shows a real kind of inner kind of desire and sort of belief in that this is what you have to do.
So
my parents were amazingly supportive, obviously, of everything I did. But they didn't really know much about, they learned through me, which was lovely. And they took me to lots of concerts. And I used to do wonderful little festivals, local festivals and things like that. And I remember they took me to go and play to Joan Last, which was wonderful. And also the lovely Dennis Matthews. So I went and played for him up in Newcastle. And anyway, so I was just having private lessons, and it wasn't going quite so well. And we thought we needed a change of teacher, wasn't sure what to do. And my mum, bless her, she found the Prussia Cove. I don't know, what's it called?
Nutrition
seminar, isn't it, down there in Prussia Cove? Anyway, she found the details about it. And she said, why don't you maybe go down there? It looks really good. Anyway, I think it was much easier to get on then than it is now. I think it's very hard to get onto, but amazingly, I got onto it. And I have to say, it kind of changed my life because I met Yonti Solomon there. So I met Yonti Solomon, and he just spoke about music and spoke about life, actually, in a way that I'd never heard before. And so basically I went and studied with him privately. So I wasn't at an institution. I was only 17 at the time. And dear Yonti was the most inspiring teacher. Everything I do now as a teacher, I can think back, and most of what I do comes from him. But there was a bit of a but in that technically, though I had some limitations, and dear Yonti wasn't quite able to kind of sort me out in that, you know, in terms of colour, shaping, nuance, voicing, you name it, amazing, just impossible to ever get bored with what he said. But if I had a technical issue, it'd go, I can't do the accent, but go, no, my darling, no, of course you can do it. And it just play it and just think, well, I can play it, so can you. But of course I couldn't. So anyway, so with his blessing, I then went to Phyllis Selleck. Now, Phyllis, who I know, Anne Martin Davis, and so on, I think Ian Jones went to her, didn't he, as well? Yeah. Anyway, lots of us. She was amazing. So I went to her lovely house in Sheen. Oh, beautiful. Anyway, so I was having this all funded by awards I'd won. And she said to me, my dear Catherine, she said, why on earth don't you come to me at the Royal College? So that's what I did. So I applied really late. I mean, I didn't apply till about May. And I started in the September. And so I went to Phyllis for 2.5 years at the college, at the Royal College. And then I went back to Yonti because she kind of sorted me out, if you know what I mean. Technically, she was like under a microscope. She was amazing. And then I went back to Yonti, and I played Liszt 1 with the orchestra, Norman Del Mar, amazing conductor. That was fantastic. It was very funny, actually, in the rehearsal. So I'd played Liszt 1 before when I was a young girl with our local youth orchestra. It was my first concerto I played with orchestra at 14. And that was great. So I was playing it again. So I kind of knew it quite well. And at the rehearsal, I was playing something, and he was saying, no, we need to do it this tempo. And he was basically telling me how I was going to play it. And I said this to Yonti, and he went, don't worry about it, just do your thing. So when it got to the concert, of course, you know, I just did my thing. And he turned around as he was conducting and gave me such a wink. It was so it was like, okay, yeah, you're the soloist, fine. But it was lovely. And that was in the concert hall, which hasn't changed much at all, actually, at the Royal College. It's still the same. But yeah, very, very happy times. I was quite busy playing quite a lot of concerts around then as well. Did a lot of chamber music, a lot of accompanying, a lot of two piano stuff as well. So yeah, it was good. There were a lot of lovely people who I still see and actually come up now onto the summer school.
Yeah.
So
It's a
people
small
I was at
world.
college with, you know, it's so nice. And Yonti, bless him, he came and taught for quite a few years. It's a sad loss. He's no longer with us. Amazing man.
Yeah, the piano world is a small, wonderful world, isn't it?
It certainly is. I mean, it really is. Yeah.
I'm afraid we're getting quite towards the end. I could be chatting with you for hours. But yeah, I ask these short questions to most of my interviewees. So how about answering these? I don't know.
Oh, gosh. Okay.
Off the cuff. If you could play only one composer from now on, who would it be?
Oh, gosh, now that's really hard. I mean, I feel like I want to say Bach, but I'm not sure I wouldn't say Brahms.
Ooh.
I don't know. Yeah.
That's
I don't know. If I was on a desert island, it would definitely be a bee. It's just which bee?
Is that true? Do you know, most people say Bach. Isn't it remarkable? And I most probably would too, because he's the
well,
father.
Well, it is. It's so all in. It's just... Yeah.
But
it's
Brahms.
But oh my gosh,
Next question. One pianist, dead or alive, you would travel long and far to hear.
Well, it's interesting actually, because I was talking to Murray about this morning over a cup of tea. I said, come on then. So he would want to hear Busoni.
Whoa.
That's
okay.
who he would want to hear. And I said, well, you know, I said maybe even someone like Liszt would be amazing. But actually, do you know what I'd really love would be to have heard Jonty when he was in South Africa? Because I don't know if you know this, he was not a classical pianist. He was a jazz pianist.
Gosh.
He literally was a jazz pianist playing with double bass in, you know, the typical jazz venues. And he only came to classical quite late. And I think that's why he was the player he was and the teacher he was. He actually came from the jazz world. So I think him or Mara Hess, who, of course, he studied with. And by therefore, I feel like I have a connection. It would have been amazing to have gone and heard her as well.
Oh,
yeah, amazing.
Wonderful. You yourself, do you have any technical struggles at the piano?
I play way, way less. I mean, when I was younger, I wouldn't have said I did. Now I would say I feel like because I'm not playing as much, I feel like my stretch and I feel like, you know, as you get older, things start to sort of, you know, go south a little. I sort of feel like maybe that's happening a little bit physically in the hands, you know. So the stretches. And I think, you know, I don't know, what's your stretch? What do you stretch?
Most probably about the same as yours.
I mean, I used to be a 10th.
Yeah.
But now, no. I would say, I, you know, big, big stretches I'm not comfortable with now. And of course, that brings up the whole debate of smaller keyboards, doesn't it? You know, because I do think that, and I was going to say women, but men have small hands too sometimes, that smaller hands, a lot of the repertoire is very challenging.
Absolutely.
You know. I just wanted to touch, have we got time to just briefly touch on adult amateurs teaching?
Absolutely.
Yeah,
because
I was teaching a lovely man yesterday and he was playing, you know, the Rachmaninoff, more so the da-da-yum. And he said to me, because he'd not brought it before, he said to me, so how difficult is this piece? What level is it? And I said to him, why does that matter? And he went, oh, well, I kind of need to know. So I told him I was doing this podcast. And I said, you know, I'm going to bring you up in the podcast. Because I do think that for a lot of adult amateurs, there is this, this desire to be challenging themselves with difficulty of repertoire. It's of course, the repertoire out there is enormous. And a lot of the pieces they hear, they go, oh, I want to play that. Well, of course, we all understand that.
Yeah.
But I think what I would say to all adult amateurs, by all means, learn the challenges of Rachmaninoff. By all means, learn these difficult pieces. But I would go alongside that with pieces that you find much, much easier. So, for instance, I played to him their Kabalevsky children's pieces. I played him some of the Scriabin Opus 11 preludes. I said, some of these pieces, I mean, the Kabalevsky, I said, the name will put you off because it's for children. I said, but they're wonderful. The Scriabin Opus 11 preludes, some of those are only grade 5, 6. You know, I said, you will find those relatively easy, but it means that you can then work on the level of a high level of sound and voicing and color and phrasing without the technical challenges that these harder pieces have for you. And I urge adult amateurs to make sure you're always playing pieces that you find quite easy alongside other things that are more challenging. And then when you actually play in a public setting or to a group, if you choose to play the easier repertoire, hopefully your nerves won't be quite so bad because you feel more confident. And that's what it's about, feeling confident when you get up and play. Have you played them, the Scriabin?
Oh, they're beautiful.
I almost prefer them to the Chopin. That's terrible to say. But
no, they're beautiful. You know,
I just think they're exquisite.
Absolutely.
And so manageable. I mean, some of them are horrific. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, some of them are so manageable. And yeah. So explore Scriabin and explore Kabalevsky and these easier pieces and get the joy. I mean, Bart's Minuet in G, you know, Andras Schiff does it as an encore. So if it's good enough for Andras Schiff, officially it's what, grade 3? Do we care? No, you know, so I think that's really important. You know, children are the same. They're always wanting to move on to the next hard piece, you know?
Yeah.
And it's a bit of a challenge to educate. That isn't necessarily the best way, you know?
Interesting, isn't it? Yeah, you could have La Campanella in the background while you're working on all the more manageable stuff.
Yeah. Think of that wonderful Mozart Fantasy in D minor. I mean, that has been set for grade 6. I mean, do you really want to hear it? Anyway, but you know what I mean? It is a masterpiece.
Absolutely.
And it's got its moments, but it's actually quite manageable and it's exquisite. Yeah. And you learn so much about playing the piano from playing it. You know, can you play that without pedal? That opening, you know, can you manage that beautifully with no pedal?
No, you're absolutely right, Catherine. Listen, your advice has been amazing. I'm afraid we are going to have to come to an end now. I think if anybody wants to have some more wonderful advice from you, they need to get up to Manchester to the summer school. it's been absolutely wonderful speaking to you. Let's hope maybe we can have you on again for a part 2.
I love it.
Yeah, why not? Maybe we can have you on again after the summer school and you could tell us all about it. That would be lovely.
Oh, that's very kind.
Oh, Catherine. Well, listen, thank you so much for joining us.
It's a pleasure.
And I'll see you soon up in Manchester.
Lovely. Have a good summer.
You too. Don't get too exhausted. Bye for now.
Bye.
From Messiaen's Quartet for the End of Time with Catherine Page at the piano. Pianist podcasts are free, and a really good way to support what we do is by subscribing to Pianist. Visit our website at pianistmagazine.com and listen to us on YouTube by searching Pianist Magazine. And don't forget to sign up to our newsletter, which is full of extra playing tips and useful information. Go to pianistmagazine.com to find out how to sign up.